We'll hear argument next in number 97-1489, Your Home Visiting Nurse Services versus Donna E. Shalala. We'll wait just a minute. Ms. Gustin.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. Petitioner is here today to complain about an insurance company. In this case, the insurance company is a fiscal intermediary, serving as the agent for the government, reviewing Medicare cost reports, making determinations about allowable cost, and also making decisions about whether or not the cost report may be reopened. In this case, the petitioner, a home health agency, discovered new and material evidence after the initial period for requesting appeal, and therefore made a request for a reopening of the cost report. The intermediary, the insurance company, denied the request to reopen, considered this a final determination, and then we filed an appeal for review of that final agency action at the Provider Reimbursement Review Board. The review board declined to accept the case, stating that it did not have jurisdiction to review the refusal to reopen. The district court upheld the jurisdictional decision of the board, and the Sixth Circuit also upheld the district court, which brings us here today. We would like to begin with the statement that there is a presumption that there will be judicial review of final agency action. And this presumption is noted in the court's decision of Bowen versus Michigan Academy of Family Physicians, where the court's opinion started with saying, we begin with a strong presumption that Congress intends judicial review of administrative action.
Well, but you had one round of administrative review here, didn't you, with the right to appeal to the district court?
We had an opportunity, a chance to make a request for an appeal, but based upon the information that we had at that time, an appeal was not sought. But when we discovered new and material evidence, which we believe shows that the intermediary violated its own regulations, upon discovery of the new and material evidence, we believe that gives us the right to request the reopening, and if that reopening is unlawfully withheld, we sought review. And so it's the review of the refusal, which is final agency action, which we are seeking.
Ms. Gustin, there has to be an end to litigation at some point, and I thought the normal rule is when there's a final judgment, you can come back and say, there are new circumstances, but whether to open for that reason is discretionary. The Administrative Procedure Act has an exception for judicial review for matters committed to agency discretion by law. And I have always thought that it's committed to agency discretion whether to reopen a closed case. They always can, but I don't think anybody has a right to it. And if they decide not to, that's the end of the matter.
Your Honor, in this Court's decision in the ICC versus Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers, which was decided in 1977, this Court held that a refusal to reopen, which was based upon new and material evidence, should have some sort of review because
otherwise — Ms. Gustin, the statute in that case provided for removal, for reopening. Here, as I understand it, the statute says nothing. The statute says — get your act together in 180 days. The Secretary then said, I'll provide for reopening, but it's going to be just this one-shot, no review. Well, so how can you compare a case where Congress said you have a right to reopen to a case where Congress made no such provision?
Well, first of all, I think that there is a statutory provision within the Medicare statute which requires reopening.
And
that would be Section 1395 XB1A Clause 2.
But that refers to reopening when the year's books have finally been closed so that you could tell what what the actual charges were. And the Secretary gave you that opportunity, didn't she?
Well, whether or not that refers to just a year-end book balancing, I think has not been decided by this Court. But in fact, the Secretary uses that reopening process for more than simply a year-end book balancing to compare estimated cost with actual cost. And so we would say, first of all, to Justice Ginsburg's question, there is statutory authority for a reopening within that.
Second, but if we read the statute to say what it does, it provides for the year-end adjustment, and that's all it provides for, then you don't have any such argument.
If you read the statute that way, but I would impress upon the Court that in this case in particular, the Secretary used the reopening process beyond that year-end book balancing period, and the Secretary routinely uses the reopening process beyond that simple
year-end. The reopening process, what Justice Ginsburg is suggesting, is that there are two reopening processes. One is the statutory requirement for reopening, and the other is the normal discretion that any agency has, but a non-reviewable discretion, to reopen a closed matter if it thinks it to be a good idea.
Well, I don't think that that it's clearly stated that Congress wanted an unreviewable, completely insulated final agency action. And I think that the decision in Michigan Academy talked at great length about the fact that the presumption to judicial review is so important that we cannot just think that Congress meant something not to be reopened.
So you can come back 10 years later, even after you've gotten this review. Let's assume we find for you here. Then you find something else 10 years later, and you come back again, and you ask the Secretary to reopen. She says, get out of here. It's 10 years later. You have judicial review of that again, right?
I believe that is correct, Your Honor. As the Ninth Circuit held,
life is too short for this kind of thing.
Well, first of all, in regard to the 10-year time frame that you put on it, I think that that would only apply in cases where there was fraud or abuse alleged, because there's normally a 3-year time period to request a reopening. And the Secretary —
suppose the Secretary said, I'm going to withdraw that regulation. Forget it. I'll stick with what Congress wrote. There is no right to reopen, period. You do it within 80 days, and if you don't have your act together by then, it's tough luck.
Well, I think that having your act together is really the problem here, because it wasn't a matter of whether or not we had our act together. It was a matter of information that the intermediary had or had access to that we did not have access to.
So perhaps Congress was mistaken in making the period 180 days, but that was Congress's period.
I think Congress was not mistaken, but I think that Congress had the section that I referenced earlier, 1395 XV1A Clause 2, which allows for corrective retroactive adjustments when a provider is either underpaid or overpaid. And that's been a part of the Act from the beginning. But I
yes,
think
but
that
we already understand that if that is has the narrow meaning that seems to have been given to it by this Court, it isn't across the board reopening.
Well, in the Court's decision that discussed that provision of the statute, whether or not the book balancing occurred within the 180 days, which would be the narrow meaning, was not really discussed in terms of the time period for the retroactive corrective adjustments. And to the contrary,
I'm focusing on what can be covered, not the time. What can be covered by that explicit statutory provision? And I thought that provision was confined to the annual overlook of the month by month.
Well, I don't believe that that provision should be confined to that, and indeed it's not in practicality. As I stated in this case, beyond that 180-day time period, this cost report was reopened because we had discovered that a nurse did not have an appropriate license. We reported that to the intermediary, and then the costs for the visits had to be reduced. And so the narrow view of the year-end book balancing happening only to do that balancing between interim payments.
Who reopened in that case?
The intermediary.
Yes,
reopened.
And I gather that's essentially what your position is. The intermediary can reopen.
Yes.
The secretary can reopen.
Yes.
It's only fair that you should be allowed to.
Yes, because if we discover wrongful acts, that unfairly deprived us of reimbursement to which we were entitled under the Act, then we should also be allowed to claim the recovery.
That's an argument in fairness and in equity, but you have a statute to deal with,
yes,
and regulations to deal with,
And we believe that the statute itself at 139500 clearly states that Congress intended that we have an appeal process after a final determination, and that that language is clear, a final determination. And it is only through the Secretary's interpretation of that phrase to mean one and only one kind of a final determination that she prohibits or restricts our ability to obtain review. And so we believe under the Chevron test, the plain meaning of the statute must govern, first of all. A final determination is what Congress said, and we have a final determination. And indeed, it makes sense that final determinations of this nature should proceed.
My notion of a final determination is a final decision on the merits of the claim. A final decision was entered. It doesn't become unfinal because you've moved to reopen it. You know, after a certain amount of time, a judgment becomes a final judgment. Thinking of civil litigation, you can move, say, under 60B, but you still have a final judgment.
That's correct, Your Honor. But under 60B, courts have held in the Sixth Circuit that a refusal to grant the relief sought under 60B when there is new and material evidence can be reviewed, but only as to whether or not there was an abuse of discretion, because otherwise...
Yeah, and it could be reviewed here, too, if Congress had provided for reopening and said, and it's reviewable.
Well, I believe that Congress provided for review by stating that a final determination as to total program reimbursement can be reviewed if you take the appropriate steps. And the refusal to reopen is a final determination as to program reimbursement. So I believe that we meet the definition under the statute itself. And I believe that that's also where the presumption to judicial review comes back, because the statutory language, I believe, is clear. But if you believe you must interpret the language in the statute, then the burden is upon the Secretary by clear and convincing proof to show that Congress did not want judicial review. And there is no language in the congressional history which states that they considered whether or not there would be a reopening process, and that should be totally and completely up to the discretion of the insurance company employee. We don't even have a governmental entity reviewing the request to reopen. We have private insurance companies that contract with the government. And we don't know anything about the individuals who are making these decisions. So we would be leaving within the discretion of one person decisions that could be worth millions of dollars to hospitals. I don't think there's anything in the congressional record to indicate that they wanted that to be the case.
And but, Joe, you have the right to review these decisions before it becomes final, do you not?
Based upon what you know at that time. And I think it's important to understand that my client and other providers should surely have the right to rely upon the intermediary to act lawfully and to give us the information that they are making the decision upon. But when they don't give us the information, or they give us the wrong information, whether it is intentional or by mistake, and we discover it later, that we should have a right to request
a
reopening.
This is a tremendously complicated and extensive system. These matters have to come to an end sooner or later.
Exactly. And I think the 3-year period within which you can request a reopening is an appropriate time period to expect the provider to act, unless, for example, there is fraud or intentional wrongdoing, which I mentioned, and there's no time period under the regulation for requesting reopening in that case.
What if somebody else thinks 3 years is not enough and petitions the Secretary to make it a 6-year reopening period, and the Secretary says no?
Well,
I assume that would be appealable on your theory of the world. The Secretary has made a final determination that she will not extend the 3-year period to 6 years.
I think the Secretary has the right to make rules that are considered reasonable. And whether or not someone could make the argument that the 6-year period was not a reasonable interpretation.
This person is in good faith and really thinks 3 years is unreasonable. That's 6 years, so that person should have a right to appeal the Secretary's final determination, not to make it 6 years.
a different question than what we're proving.
I know it's a different question.
And I think different points of law apply to that, and that would be whether or not the six-year period was a reasonable interpretation of the statute.
No, that's the point of law. The point of law is whether it's a final determination. That's the point of law at issue here. That's a final determination, just as this is.
But a final
I will not extend it to 6 years.
But the final determination we're referring to here is the one that's laid out in the statute, which is as to the amount of total program reimbursement covered by the cost report.
No, it isn't. The final determination at issue here is whether she will reopen the determination she's already made. That's the final determination. She says, no, I will not reopen.
Yes, and we say that the final determination when she says she will not reopen, is one which goes to the total amount of program reimbursement, which is what the statute defines.
No more so than in my hypothetical. This person who wants 6 years has found something else beyond the three-year period, which will affect the total amount of reimbursement to which he was entitled.
Well, that case is not before the court, Your Honor, and I really don't know how to answer that in terms of how it applies to
the court. Of course you know how to answer it. You have to answer it that, yes, it's reviewable because it's a final determination.
Well, then it's reviewable because it's a final determination as to the total amount of program reimbursement. But we have a regulation here. This regulation concerning the three-year time period was before this court most recently with regard to the graduate medical education re-audit regulation. And there the Secretary argued successfully and very strongly that the three-year period was what was important
that was a case where the Secretary came back within 3 years.
Yes.
And as far as I can see, you are basically complaining about an asymmetrical statute where the Secretary can reopen in 3 years and you can't.
We're complaining.
And I can understand that you think that that's not fair. What I have a hard time seeing is how you turn everything into a final determination, never mind that we have had the equivalent of a final adjudication on the merits of the claim.
I think it's important, Your Honor, to focus upon the abuse of discretion that is possible in deciding whether or not a final determination can be more than simply the first notice of program reimbursement letter that you receive.
Maybe it could be, but the Secretary says it isn't, right?
The Secretary goes
all right, so that's the if it's not a final determination within the meaning of 1395-00,
yes,
you're out of luck.
Unless
you're going to go under mandamus. Is that
well, federal question jurisdiction.
Federal question jurisdiction. You have a statute that specifically says no action shall fall under federal question jurisdiction unless you go through 1395-00.
Doesn't
it say that specifically?
It says that specifically,
right.
Your Honor. But
so if we follow that, you're out of luck unless it's 1395-00 and you're not in 1395-00 unless it's a final determination. Am I right?
Well, there are alternative arguments which were presented, and I think that under federal question jurisdiction as an alternative, if you're not allowed to use the 1395-00 administrative procedure in the normal route, and if you have raised a claim that is collateral to the underlying amounts of the benefit claim, then federal question jurisdiction is appropriate, as it was in Bowen versus Michigan Academy.
What do we do about the statement, no action against the United States Commissioner of Social Security or any officer or employee shall be brought under Section 1331?
On any claim.
To cover on any claim arising under this title. Do you have a claim arising under this title?
Well, we believe that on any claim is like a term of art, and that means the claim of benefits. But if we claim that there was an abuse of discretion, if we claim that the intermediary act unlawfully violated its own regulations, that is a collateral issue, just like in Bowen versus Michigan Academy, the statute or the regulation,
have to decide, do you have a claim? Are you trying to bring a claim under the title? If I answer that question, I think you are. Suppose you are. You're trying to bring a claim. You're trying to get some money from them. That's what it means. If I believe that, then are you out of luck?
No.
Unless you have a final determination. And they say you don't. But you say you do.
Yes.
And so for you to win on that, you have to show not only are they wrong, they're just really unreasonable. Is that right?
That they're wrong, they're unreasonable, and they're violating their own regulations.
All right. Now, to focus on that, what is unreasonable about saying these things have to come to an end?
Well, there are two collateral claims that were raised. One was the collateral claim that the refusal to reopen and no judicial review is unreasonable, all right? Then the second collateral issue that was raised was the fact that the owner's compensation is required to be in accordance with comparable institutions and that they had or had access to a salary survey which had a salary range which was much higher than what they were applying to the petitioner, and therefore they were not applying owner's compensation in accordance with their own regulation. And so that was a violation of that regulation. A collateral claim to asking for additional owner's compensation, a claim that they didn't do it right, and if they violated that regulation or other regulations or a regulation is found invalid, then we believe that's a collateral claim, not about the
claim. I have trouble with your description of that as a collateral claim. Your claim, you have one claim, that is you're entitled to more reimbursement. You have a number of reasons why the procedure should allow you to do this, mm-hmm. but to slice up pieces of your argument in support of your claim for reimbursement and call each one of those a separate claim doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, there are arguments in the alternative, Your Honor, because first and foremost, we believe that the statute itself allows us judicial review, some type of review process for abuse of discretion. And we only turn to Section 1331 for federal question jurisdiction and then posit the claim itself as collateral to that normal appeals process as an alternative view, an alternative way of looking at this, because we believe there must be some kind of review because Congress did not prohibit review of this final agency action.
I think that's what perhaps bothers some of us, is that in your view, any time you come in, whether it's, you know, 6 months after the final order or 2 years after the final, and say, I want a reopening, that becomes a new final order. And I really don't think the presumption of review that you're talking about extends that far.
I don't think that the broader reading of any time you come in is applicable here, and I don't think it's necessary to view this case in those terms. I think it's appropriate to have a reasonable time period to limit the reopening, just like it's appropriate for Congress to say the dollar amount in controversy for your claim must be $10,000.
Yes,
I think those are procedural.
There Congress has said you have to have $10,000 or whatever it is, but Congress has not provided any period for reopening.
No, but I think the Secretary has filled that gap with her regulation, and I think that's an appropriate time period. And the Secretary uses that time period and has relied upon it and convinced this Court that millions of dollars can be recovered from hospitals within that 3-year time period under the Graduate Medical Education Regulation in Regents Hospital. And I think that Congress wanted the providers to stand on an even footing with the Secretary in regard to these corrective retroactive adjustments. And that's why the language in the statute says that providers or the Secretary may have corrective retroactive adjustments when the provider's payments have been excessive or when they have been underpaid. Congress gave us either situation, but the Secretary's reading turns that system upside down and makes it so that the Secretary only has that right, because we have no right to correct the Secretary's action if we cannot have review of a refusal. And therefore, the most abusive situations may go uncorrected if the Secretary's system is allowed to stand. Intermediary insurance company employees could intentionally decide not to reopen because they don't like the particular provider. They could have a system of covering up information, and as long as they kept that information hidden for 180 days, we'd have no recourse.
The nature of the reimbursement that you say you were entitled to and didn't get, it was a little fuzzy to me.
The nature of the reimbursement was owner's compensation. The owners who operate the home health agency are entitled to compensation, and the regulation says that the compensation should be in accordance with comparable institutions.
And you made that claim initially and were turned down.
I beg your pardon?
You made a claim for the owner's compensation originally?
It was on the cost report. It was claimed on the
cost
report.
And it was denied, and you didn't appeal it.
And an adjustment was made, and no appeal
denied,
was taken.
Wasn't denied in full, denied in part. They gave lower compensation. You just claimed that the rate should have been higher.
Yes, because it should have been based upon the salary survey for chain operations, because this was a chain operation. The salary survey that they used was for one individual agency, and that range was like 28 to 58.
You knew that there were chain operations and the individual operations. Why, when you were reduced in the amount you claimed, didn't you make that argument? We're like the chains.
Well, we had reported as a chain. We did not know that the intermediary had the salary survey for chain operations, which established a salary range between $71,000 and $98,000. That salary range was not applied to these petitioners. Instead, a much lower salary range for an individual agency was applied. This information about the salary survey was within the intermediary's knowledge. It was not within our knowledge. They did not tell us that they had this other salary survey and that it was being used against us. And we believe that they should have, and that was a violation of the law, because they should have told us everything that they were basing their adjustment on. And we have a right to rely upon the intermediary doing the right thing and doing
the law.
Maybe
you have a cause of action against the intermediary.
Well, we don't have
the agency here.
I don't think we have a cause of action against the intermediary, because they're the agent for the government, and the cause of action is supposed to be brought against the principal, because they're responsible for what their agent does. And indeed, it's the government and their position that they don't have to allow any type of review of the intermediary's action, which keeps us from getting the appropriate amount of compensation. And if we could prove this unlawful action, then failing to reopen would be an abuse of discretion, and then we would have the normal.
How did you find this out later rather than earlier? Why couldn't you have found it out sooner?
Well, the discovery process that would be available would only happen if you filed a normal appeal process and started down the normal route with Provider Reimbursement Review Board. And then, even if we had done that and asked the question, there's no guarantee that they would have then told the truth.
But you didn't do it. You didn't do it.
So no, we didn't
You're saying we could have done it, but we didn't do it, and now later on we want to do it. That's
now,
essentially.
We're saying we, based upon the information that we had.
But
we
could have gotten, if you appealed to the PR or whatever,
PR,
you could have then had discovery.
And we may or may not have found out the information then, because they may have said, no, we don't have the survey.
But you're saying you're not going to bother using the remedy that Congress did provide, that is, in 180 days you can pursue this? You didn't, because you said, well, maybe we wouldn't have failed. I think
that your concern actually shifts the whole question of finality into the other realm, in which all providers who were denied reimbursement for any reason would have to file an appeal within 180 days, or know that even if they discovered wrongful action on the part of intermediary, there's no recourse. Even if the law was changed and if regulations were determined invalid after the 180 days,
but
there would be no
given a reason why you didn't have a perfectly adequate remedy for your case
within the
180 days. You said, well, before you got to the board, you would not have had discovery, but then you would have had discovery.
We would have had discovery.
In other words, she's saying that is not this case, the hypothetical that the tables for once,
yes.
You know.
Yes. That is not this case, but this case stands for more than just this case, because every provider will be bound by the ruling that comes out of this court. And so I think it's important to understand the ramifications of the decision that you make. And the situation might not be like this case, and it might be that the intermediary has intentionally covered up evidence and then on the 181st day comes out and announces,
we should have not taken your case and waited for such a case.
Well, I believe that the facts in our case are sufficient for this court to decide, because I think it is wrong for the intermediary to have a salary survey that they know about, that we do not know about, and not use it when they are required to do so under law. I think that's certainly a strong enough case for this court. And the only way that we discovered this is when we hired a CPA who had represented other clients and had seen the salary survey used for those other clients. So by independent means, we discovered this. The intermediary may never have told us. We may never have been able to find out. that they were doing this. And I think that's the problem with the situation here. The intermediary and its employees can do anything, and as long as we don't know about it for 180 days, they can violate any law, and if they refuse to reopen, there is no recourse.
It's not a perfect world.
There
has to be
world.
An end of litigation. You could say in any case that new evidence comes up later and we can start relitigating all over again.
But we're satisfied to do this within the confines of the Secretary's regulation on reopening.
Thank you, Ms. Dustin.
Thank you.
Ms. Blatt, we'll hear from you.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, the Secretary has reasonably construed the Medicare Act not to require administrative review of an intermediary's decision refusing to reopen under the Secretary's regulations. The text of Section 1395-00A gives providers a right to an evidentiary hearing before the Board if they are dissatisfied with a final determination as to the amount of their total program reimbursement. That language refers to the intermediary's annual substantive reimbursement determination.
So this perhaps presumably happens about once a year?
Yes. For each cost period, there is a notice of amount of program reimbursement, which is referred to as the NPR. And it's clear that the language, and both sides concede this, or petitioner concedes this, that is a final determination as to the amount of...
Now, the statutes don't refer to any reopening right.
That's correct.
But the Secretary has nonetheless promulgated a regulation allowing an application for reopening.
That's correct.
Within 3 years.
That's correct.
And what provision of the statute does the Secretary look to for authority to even have such a regulation?
The Secretary has relied on her general rulemaking authority to promulgate that, which is in Section 1302 and 1395HH. And at least the D.C. Circuit and the Ninth Circuit have held that the Secretary's general rulemaking authority is the statutory basis for the reopening regulation.
And if a reopening were granted within the discretion referred to by the Secretary, would there be an appeal right from that?
If there is a
decision, if it's reopened and a decision is made, then that would trigger some new appeal right?
Yes, with respect to the matters revised. So if there's a correction, uh-huh. And obviously if the what happened in the Regents case, if there was a request for recoupment, then there's a 180 days to challenge the actual change.
What if there's no correction? What if in one of those rare cases where the Secretary reopens in order not for her benefit, but for the benefit of a claimant, she finds nonetheless against the claimant, then would that determination be appealable?
The Secretary's position, as reflected in the manual and is in the regulation, is that there has to be an actual correction or an adjustment to the cost report. It's rare, but it does happen where there'll be a notice of reopening issued, a reconsideration, and yet no change. And it has been the Secretary's...
So sort of a one-way appeal where she loses, where there's an adjustment, where there is an adjustment. If there's an adjustment upward, no one would have an interest in appealing, right? If there's an adjustment downward, the claimant can appeal.
That's correct, although if there's just a partial adjustment upward, the Secretary has construed or has permitted an appeal in that situation.
Partial
adjustment.
Where the claimant doesn't get everything that he or she wants. Would that be a final order?
The regulations give the providers a right to challenge that as a new substantive reimbursement determination, and it's actually a revised NPR that's issued, and they can challenge the matters that got revised or that were revised.
I know you say they can challenge it, but is it, in your view, a final order?
It's consistent with the language of a final determination as to the amount of total program reimbursement.
And it's under OO, you think it comes up?
Yes, it's under OOA1A1.
So that if there is a reopening, a discretionary reopening, and there's an adjustment, the order providing for the adjustment is a final determination. But if there's no adjustment, it's not a final determination.
That's correct. The Secretary has rationally distinguished and said if there's just a mere refusal to alter or reconsider a prior determination, there's no right to an evidentiary hearing before the Board.
No, but we're assuming, I'm assuming there has been a three-week evidentiary hearing, a lot of findings of fact and everything else, but the net result is no adjustment.
Right.
That's not a final determination.
It wouldn't be an evidentiary hearing. It's just before the intermediary. The intermediary would review it and then not make. That has been the Secretary's position thus far. I mean, that's not what happened in this case.
It's not this case, you were about to say, right?
There's no question that there was not a — that there was no reopening here.
Do you think the Secretary could issue a regulation authorizing review in that situation?
In this case or a situation?
Well, either the no-adjustment case or this case, either one.
I think it's possible. I don't think the most —
Would it be consistent with the statute?
Yes. I think it's not the most natural reading to read a mere refusal to reconsider a prior determination, a new final determination as to the total amount. But I think the statute's ambiguous, and the Secretary could articulate a reasonable rationale to justify that result. The question here, of course, is whether the Secretary reasonably construed the statute not to require a full-blown evidentiary hearing. And we think the language supports that for two reasons, and that is because it is the Secretary's regulations, not the Medicare Act itself, that provides the opportunity to seek reopening, and we think it does further the interest of administrative finality. And this Court reached a quite similar conclusion in the Califano versus Sanders case when the Court held that there was no judicial review for refusals to reopen Social Security benefit determinations. And the Court said that for two reasons. One was the opportunity to reopen was afforded solely by the Secretary's regulations and not the Social Security Act, and a contrary reading would frustrate Congress's intent to impose a specific time limit on the review of the initial decision. And this complaint about an anomaly with reopening under the Medicare Act is no different under the Social Security Act. The claimants are permitted the opportunity to seek reopening, and it may or may not get granted, but there's no right of review. And, of course, the Commissioner of Social Security can institute reopening. And if there's a change in the benefits, then only the claimant will get review.
What would happen under the current regulations if the Secretary reopens and says, we reimburse them too much, so we want to recoup part of it, and then the provider says, well, you also underpaid us, so we want to offset the underpayment against the excess payment. Do the Secretary allow that kind of a defensive set off if the Secretary initiates the reopening?
It's reopening is what's known in the is issue specific, and so if it's on that issue, I imagine, I'm not positive of this, that there is that kind of give and take.
But if it's,
if it's not on the same issue, then they need to formally request a reopening on that issue, and then the intermediary would consider it based on the criteria.
And if it says no?
If it says no, it's not reviewable. No, and the review process would be issue-specific, and only if there was an adjustment would that be subject.
How do you respond to this essential fairness argument that's made that the Secretary has given herself 3 years to reopen? And if she loses, she can get review. But the providers get this non-reviewable order that they're stuck with.
Right. In addition to this being no different than the Social Security Act, which, by the way, I think is quite significant, governs all Medicare beneficiaries on whose behalf these hospitals are providing the services, as well as physicians who provide services. They're governed by the same regime.
They reopen only the issue there? And not the whole determination. I mean, it's bad enough, as Justice Ginsburg describes it, but it really gets unfair when you say the Secretary does reopen, but only reopens for this one issue. And even though you may have things on the other side, you can't bring them in. That is really unfair.
They can bring them in, and they can request reopening.
Yeah, but
as 3 years.
She can say no, and there's no review for it.
That's right, and I don't think there would be any difference under the Social Security Act
system. That's also an issue-by-issue thing.
Yes, it's only the way the process works, you're only entitled to an administrative hearing before an ALJ if there's an actual change in the benefits, and there's no review if there's simply a denial. The other reason why that there's not an irrational balance is that this is a $120 billion program, and there are, as we said in our acquiescence to the petition in this case, a backlog of 10,000 cases before the board, and that takes over 3 years just to get a hearing on initial challenges to on challenges to the initial NPRs. And it's just it would be an enormous administrative and as well as financial burden on the system to open this up to any refusal to reconsider a prior determination. And presumably the petitioner's argument would extend to refusals to reconsider, refusals to reopen, and so forth and so on. You'd have 3 years after any kind of decision, and that would be a new final determination under that reading. And the Secretary has rationally cut it off.
And as for the as I recall, you also make the fairness argument that the Secretary gives herself 3 years, but the Secretary needs 3 years, more than an individual applicant does, because she has a few more things to do.
The simple truth of the matter is the Secretary administers this program. There are 38 intermediaries and has no access to the hospital's records. The hospital, on the other hand, are by and large very sophisticated entities, and they're actually very good about appealing within the 180 days. They have 6 months to appeal. This case is particularly instructive because here the petitioner protested the $50,000 that's at issue here on the cost report. This was a red flag that the provider was going to appeal, and as far as we could tell, there is no reason why the provider did not appeal. As far as the way the petitioner's brief was structured is the petitioner did appeal cost years prior to 1989.
You're talking about the brief before the board or the
brief? I think
brief
it's the brief, the blue brief on the merits in
this court.
Says the petitioner discovered the salary survey in the course of appealing prior years. And in all events, the petitioner appealed in 1987 and appealed four or five years after 1989 and could have sought discovery. There's no reason to presume bad faith on the intermediary with respect to production. Again, like I said, there's just no reason that the provider didn't appeal in this case. If I could also turn to Clause 2, if I can refer it to that way, and that's 1395XV1A2, which this Court referred to as Clause 2 in the Good Samaritan case. And we think that this decision squarely forecloses any argument that Clause 2 is the basis for reopening or requires a reopening procedure. What the Court held in Good Samaritan was that Clause 2 was ambiguous, and it upheld the Secretary's narrow reading as a year-end, and the Court several times referred to it as a year-end book balancing accounting reconciliation. And that would reconcile the amounts paid to the provider during the year that were simply estimates, pre-audit, periodic payments, with the amount that the NPR determined to be allowable. And that's actually, if you look at the NPR in this case, it shows that reconciliation, and I think it's on page it's page 36 of the Joint Appendix. So that this is how the Secretary administers the program. This is how the regulations work. A reopening procedure is something entirely distinct from that. It's a substantive redetermination, or at least a request to redetermine what had been reimbursable. If I could also address the issue that these are private insurance companies, these are intermediaries making the decision. These are the Secretary's agents, and they do act under her close oversight and supervision. And we think it's also significant that intermediaries are nominated by the providers themselves. And if there's some suspicion that the intermediary is biased or unfair, the provider is always free to request a change in the intermediary or not nominate the intermediary. There's simply no allegation in this case that intermediaries act distinctively with bad faith with respect to reopening as opposed to any other initial decision. And, of course, the provider and all hospitals have the opportunity to challenge the initial underlying determination within the six-month time period. And then if I could also address the question of Section 1331 jurisdiction. In addition to the plain language of Section 405H, the third sentence, which forecloses any action arising under the Medicare Act, this Court in Heckler versus Ringer and again in Weinberger versus Salfi made clear that the Court was not going to look at procedural labels or substantive labels, but would look at whether the standing and substantive basis for the claim arises under the Medicare Act. And so I'm not sure where the provider in this case talks about a collateral challenge. That's not from any decision, that doesn't come from any decision of this Court. The only exception, of course, is the Michigan Academy decision, and that was dealing with a far cry from this situation. There was no review whatsoever of the Secretary's regulations under Part B. And Part A, which involves this case as well now as Part B, providers are free to raise any kind of challenge before the board and under the Part A and Part B beneficiary side, the administrative law judge, and then the courts. They can bring both amount challenges to their benefits as well as any kind of facial challenge to a regulation. And so we just don't think the Michigan Academy exception or distinction has any relevance to this case when there was a full right of review. And again, I would also remind the court about the Sanders decision where under the Social Security Act, there is no right of review, and the court made clear in that case that 1331 was that Section 405H barred jurisdiction, federal question jurisdiction, under Section 1331. And then if I could just finally address the mandamus aspect of this, which the petitioner also relies on. We think mandamus is barred by the second sentence of Section 405H. But in all events, there is no basis for seeking mandamus relief in this case. The two challenges are, of course, the refusal to reopen and then the underlying complaint about the owner's compensation. Both of those require discretion on the part of the intermediary. The regulations are in the manuals plain on its face that the decision whether to reopen is discretionary. And certainly the question about whether costs are reasonable and allowable under the statute also requires the exercise of discretion. And as to the underlying claim about entitlement to reimbursement, certainly there's no question that the petitioner failed to exhaust its administrative remedies by not appealing within the time frame. If there are no further questions, that completes my argument.
Thank you, Ms. Platt. The case is submitted.
The Honorable Court is now adjourned until Monday next at 10 o'clock.